So this is very exciting. It's always exciting to start a new limud. It's always starting to start a new sefer. And when I was thinking about what halacha topic to choose for the chabura, so hilchos tefillah is certainly an interesting topic, I think an important topic. But I thought in order to kind of make it a little bit more, you know, different than usual and maybe grab a little bit more attention, I thought it'd be kedai to study a specific sefer, and in particular a sefer which I think, you know, most people have not yet heard of. In all fairness, it is a new sefer, but I think it has the potential, at least for the parts that I've read, to be a really great sefer. And this is the sefer that I told you about when I announced this year, called Rav Schechter on Tefillah. Let me just spend a minute or two telling you about the sefer, and then we'll read the opening chapter. This is a sefer, and it's really, this is almost more important than the Torah will learn, is to hear about the history of the sefer, because it should be tremendous inspiration and chizuk for everyone. And that is, this is the fourth, if I'm not mistaken, the fourth in a series of Sfarim, all of which have come out just in the last few years, that have been written up and adapted from Rav Schechter's Shiurim and various written works, but then taken together and consolidated and edited and put it in thematic way in English. The fourth in a series, all of which have been, I don't know if you want to call him the author, the editor, but the person whose name appears on the cover other than Rav Schechter is somebody named Dr. Alan Weissman. I do not know Dr. Weissman, but the little bit that I heard about him, I think in one of the previous books that came out, as his title implies, he is a full-time medical doctor, if I'm not mistaken. And I think he spends maybe one day a week coming to YU to learn at this point. I don't exactly know how old he is, but at least in this volume, he wishes mazel tov to one of his children on getting married in his new mechutanim. So, you know, he's, you know, maybe he's my age, maybe a little older. I'm not sure exactly. And the incredible thing is that these books, the three other volumes before this one, are Rav Schechter on the Parsha, Rav Schechter on Mo'adim, and then Rav Schechter on the Haggadah. And it's incredible, you know, even a full-time Rebbe or a full-time Rabbi to have published, you know, four Sfarim in 4 years, or four Sfarim period in his whole career, would be quite an accomplishment. But for someone whose full-time profession is in something not Torah-related, to take Talmud Torah seriously enough, to take his relationship with his Rebbe seriously enough, and then to put in the time and the investment of time and resources and energy to put out one sefer, four Sfarim, and such. It's really an incredible, thing. You know, the Gemara talks about, in a different context, how, you know, no matter what situation you are in life, there's never a patur from Talmud Torah. You know, Hillel was Machayev the Aniyim, and this one's Machayev the Ashirim, because everyone has an excuse. If you're single, you have an excuse. If you have married with children, you have an excuse. If you're poor, you have an excuse. If you're rich, you have an excuse. And the Gemara gives different famous figures who represented those different kind of characteristics, who nevertheless overcame their challenges to be able to learn. So there are many examples. This is not the only one, but it's worth, in this context, as we begin the limud, to mention that Dr. Weissman is mechayiv the balabatim. You know, you don't have to be a rabbi or a full-time learner or a full-time shul rabbi or yeshiva rabbi to be a talmid chacham and to work on Torah and to publish Torah and to share Torah. I'm not saying it's easy, and he's also not the only one. But if he and other people like him can do it, that at least means it's possible. Not easy, but possible. And if nothing else, that should also be a tremendous inspiration for you to, and a chizuk for all of us to aspire to. I hope some of you, and then some of you who listen to the recording, will hopefully be rabbeim and rabbanim. But even those who don't, you shouldn't therefore not have aspirations in learning. There are great accomplishments, whether you're a doctor, lawyer, accountant, a computer programmer, engineer, architect, that a person can have in learning, and this sefer is just one example. Okay, without further ado, I don't know if we'll necessarily every week go straight. We might, but certainly for the opening shiur, I thought it made sense to start with the opening chapter of the sefer. I don't know for sure that this will be so helpful, but just in case it's helpful, I made a little bit of an outline of the structure of this first chapter, which you can kind of reference. Maybe we'll toggle back and forth from. And this is with some of the main makoros. You'll see that the most commonly repeated name there is Rav Soloveitchik, because it's Rav Schechter. He quotes him a lot. But this is just the main sources. There are many other sources I didn't necessarily put on the sheet. And this is just the opening chapter of the Sefer, which is entitled The Essence of Tefillah. What I'd like to do is, I hope we'll have time to go through the whole chapter. I think it's 14 pages in the book. Obviously, the highlights. We'll get as far as we can, and hopefully till the end. But we'll get as far as we can. I'd like to kind of go back and forth between my paraphrasing and summarizing and presenting of the content in the Sefer, as well as maybe at certain points, for clarity's sake, actually reading some of the text of the Sefer. So the chapter begins with the well-known machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban about whether there is an obligation midoraisa to daven every single day. The Rambam in his Sefer HaMitzvos, Mitzvah Asay Hey, tells us that in fact, midoraisa, there's a chiyuv on everyone, on every person, to daven once a day. Where did the Rambam get this from? What's the Rambam's source? There's a mitzvah daraisa to daven. So this is the famous Gemara in the beginning Masech Tainis on Daf Beis Amad Aleph, which darshins the posuk La'avos Hashem Elokeichem ul'avdo b'chol levavchem. What does that mean? La'avdo b'chol levavchem. The Gemara asks the question: Is we have avodah she believe heavy omer zutfila? This is the basis of the idea of calling davening avodah she believe. And here you have the drasha based on a pasuk in Devarim. It's a pasuk in Devarim, a pasuk in the Torah. And it seems like from this Gemara, the Rambam learns the Gemara, you see from this pasuk, a chiyuv to daven. Now incidentally, this is, I think, you know, the first ha'ara that Rav Schechter mentions. Even in the Rambam, it's not obvious though, from this pasuk, from this Gemara in Tainis, how did the Rambam know that the chiyuv to daven is once a day? Maybe there's an idea of a avodah shebelev, a chiyuv to daven, but maybe that's, you know, once a week, once a month, once a year, once a lifetime. How did the Rambam know that avodah shebelev was every day? So here Rav Schechter suggests, and if I understand a reference at the end of the paragraph, this might have been something that he saw in the Stipler. I didn't have a chance to look it up, but he does quote the Stipler, the Kilas Yaakov. That's, for those of you in your generation, we could say Rav Chaim Kanievsky's father. And that is that, in general, whenever the Torah is not explicit about how frequently one has to do a certain mitzvah asay, a positive mitzvah, then the default assumption is that you have to fulfill it every day. That's an interesting theory. I have to say I never thought about it or noticed that until I saw that in the Sefer. Just keep that in the back of your mind in general when you're learning, including in Chumash or Halacha. I'm assuming that it's likely to be true if Rav Schechter is quoting this, but I have to say, I'd be curious just in my own learning to see if I pick up on this at other times. I don't know how many other examples exist. Rav Schechter mentions Birkas Kohanim, that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah understands that there's a mitzvah of Birkas Kohanim every day, even though that's also not explicit in the Torah that it's dafka, a daily obligation. But be that as it may, that is the basic shita of the Rambam, that there is a mitzvah asay to daven every day. Now, even the Rambam admits that that doesn't solve the entire problem. After all, there's a Gemara in Brachos on Daf Kaf Aleph Amud Aleph, which tells us explicitly that davening is only rabbinic, midr rabbanan. So how do you resolve the contradiction? So here the Rambam has, again, this may even be familiar to you, it's certainly well known in general, the Rambam makes the following distinction. He says, da'oraisa, yes, you have to daven every day. But when you daven, how often you daven, and what nusach, what language you daven, what words you say, that would be totally up to you, midoraisa, totally up to you. We'll get back to that. It might not be as fluid as I just mentioned, but basically. However, says the Rambam, the fact we have to daven three times a day, morning, afternoon, and evening, and specifically that we have a set nusach, a nusach ha-tefillah, that is all midorabanan, and that's what the other Gemara is referring to. So combine, very easily understood, that is the shita of the Rambam. The Rambam is you have to daven every day, but midoraisa, that would have been any once a day in any language. The fact that we daven three times a day, which times of the day, and in the nusach of tefillah, that's rabbinic. Okay, everything clear? That is the shita of the Rambam. The Ramban, in his hasagos, his comments to the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, in which he, you know, levels his various critiques and disagreements with the Rambam. So the Ramban disagrees, and he holds that the mitzvah to daven every day is only midrabanan. I, the Gemara says, avodah shebelev, had tefillah, says the Ramban, that pasuk is just an asmachta, it's just a remez. It's not a bona fide makor. However, and here's an important ha'ara that Rav Schechter quotes from Rav Soloveitchik. He points out that it does not, I'll ask the question this way. This is not exactly the way it's presented in the book, but let me put it to you this way. And again, this might be the kind of thing that you often hear people quote. You know, it's a well-known thing. Rambam, Ramban, is there a mitzvah daraisa to daven every day? Ramban says no. Okay, fine. Does that mean, let's take a step back for a second. Does that mean that according to the Ramban, on a Torah level, the conception of Yiddishkeit, the conception of Judaism, the conception of our relationship with Hashem, had no concept of talking to him, had no concept of talking to Hashem, of asking Hashem for anything. That's all invented by Chazal. I don't mean invented Chas Hashem in a cynical way. Chazal are allowed to invent things. It's called a Takana Midrabanan. Right? If the Ramban says that davening every day is a Chiyuv Midrabanan. So what does that mean? Until Chazal instituted it, there was no such thing as davening? Logically, that seems impossible. Plus, don't we have examples in history that people daven? Isn't that mentioned ever? People talking to Hashem? I mean, what does that mean? Is there no mitzvah? So here, quoting from Rav Soloveitchik, he points out that the Ramban mentions something that he calls Inyan HaTfilah. Sounds kind of a yeshivish thing, but this is in the Ramban. He calls the Inyan HaTfilah, the concept, the notion of davening, that existed even midaraisa. It's just that, continues the Ramban, there was no chiyuv to daven, but if you wanted to daven, then you certainly could, and Hashem hopefully would answer your prayers. The Rav, when he quoted this, he employed kind of a classical brisker terminology, and he pointed out that what the Ramban is saying is, while there's no chiyuv to daven, there was a kiyum. There was a kiyum. You can fulfill a mitzvah even without there being a pre-existing obligation. And this is itself a very fascinating idea. The idea that you could fulfill a mitzvah even when there was no chiyuv. But, and I won't spend the time on now because it's more of a tangent in the book, but Rav Schechter goes on to quote other examples in halacha where we have this idea that maybe there's no chiyuv to do something, but if you do it, it's a kiyum. And that apparently is how Rav Soloveitchik initially understood this part of the Ramban. That even he agrees that there's a notion of davening on a daily basis. It's even a kiyum mitzvah. But he holds against the Rambam, he holds it's not a chiyuv. Now, one more nuance on this before we move to the next point. I take it back. So Ad Kan, Roman numeral one, so to speak, on the outline. That's step one is a machlokes about daily prayer. Rambam says yes, Ramban says no. Even the Rambam agrees that there are certain elements that they're Rabbanon. And conversely, even the Ramban agrees that there's an inyan, there's an idea, a concept of tefillah, midaraisa. However, we now move on to Roman numeral number two. And that is the notion of davening in a moment of crisis. Crisis can be financial, it can be health, it can be war, lots of different crises in life, theoretically. Why do I mention this? Because Rav Schechter goes on to quote from the continuation of the Ramban, that even though the Ramban held that there's no daily obligation to daven midaraisa, but the Ramban did think that there is an idea of chiyuv daraisa to daven, and that is be'es tzara. At a time of crisis, not only nationally, but even individually, according to the Ramban, there's a chiyuv, not just a chiyuv now there's a chiyuv to daven, be'es tzara, at a moment of crisis. Where did the Ramban know this from? The Ramban knew this from the psukim about when the Jewish people go to war. V'chi savo milchama ba'artzachem, ahatzar tzoraretchem, right? People come to attack us, we're in a war, and what does the Torah tell us? V'areyosa b'chatzosros. You will blow the trumpets. And the purpose of the trumpets is not some magical thing. It's not just to scare the enemy necessarily. Right? The main thing is to arouse the Jewish people to turn their hearts to Hashem, to daven for success in war. So that is an ace tzara, as the Torah describes it. Says the Ramban, that wasn't just limited to war, and that wasn't just limited to the trumpets. That's a paradigm that teaches us that whenever a Jew is in crisis, whenever a Jew is in tzara, then he has to daven. That is what's known as an eith tzara. And I want to mention briefly now for a second, Rav Schechter then quotes the famous interpretation of Rav Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva, in the Igros Moshe. And I didn't have a chance to double check that tshuva today, but I've seen it in the past. And if memory serves, Rav Schechter was quoting the famous tshuva that the Rav had when he talked about non-Jews davening. And I believe that Rav Moshe had a chiddush, I think this is what's being alluded to, that there is a chiyuv for non-Jews to also daven be'es tzara. Why? And what does that have to do with what we're talking about? So the common denominator, the chiddush that Rav Moshe Feinstein teases out, and that Rav Schechter discusses here in the piece, is that davening be'es tzara is ultimately a kiyum, not just so much in davening, but what's on a more fundamental level? What is to daven when you're in crisis? What is that really an expression of? On a deeper level. What is that, Ariel? Exactly. Emunah. And non-Jews, again, that's the topic of Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva, that's not the topic of our essay, but non-Jews are also obligated in emuna. In other words, I'll say it in the negative. If you're in a crisis and you still don't turn to Hashem, you still don't daven, that's an indication that you don't believe. In other words, what Rav Moshe is poskening is the idea of no atheists in a foxhole. And if in a foxhole you still don't daven, then maybe talk, you are an atheist. It's a chisaron in emuna not to daven in crisis. And therefore the Ramban says, everybody has to daven. That's not a daily chiyuv. According to the Ramban, there is no daily chiyuv. According to the Ramban, there is a chiyuv to daven if you're in crisis. Now Rav Schechter goes on to quote a very, very famous explanation of Rav Soloveitchik. Because Rav Soloveitchik suggested that on this basic point, even the Rambam agreed. I'm not sure if any of you have heard this before. This is a well-known idea in the thought of Rav Soloveitchik, that he suggested a tremendous chiddush, that even the Rambam agrees with the Ramban that the essence of tefillah is eis tzara, is davening in crisis. Well, if that's the case, then why does the Rambam think you have to daven every single day? So here Rav Soloveitchik explained that really what the Rambam and the Ramban are arguing about is the nature of the human condition and the nature of crisis. And for here, I'll read a little bit from Rav Schechter's, from this book itself. The root of the machlokes lies in how one views the human condition. The Rambam believes that a person must recognize that a situation is always precarious. The chiddush of the Rambam, as understood by Soloveitchik, is that all of life is one big eis tzara. Now, if you're not completely stable, that might throw you over the edge. That's a little bit of an overwhelming thought if you're not a well-balanced person. But if you are well-balanced, then you can process this. It is heavy. I'll grant you it's heavy. But it's not necessarily depressing. It's just kind of, you know, being real about things. Said of Soloveitchik that the Rambam understood that all of life is precarious. Even if your health is present, at any moment you can be diagnosed with a serious illness. Even if you're wealthy today, you can suffer a financial ruin, right? Just think about the corona, right? Think about how many lives, both financially and health-wise, radically changed over a few months without any, you know, without any warning, at least for the most part. I'm not going to discuss now whether some experts should have known or not known. Should they have told the rest of us? Should they have figured it out? I'll leave that for somebody else. But the average person, even if you read the news, had no clue that the world as we knew it was about to become turned on its head. Therefore, all of life is a big eis tzara. And therefore, says the Rambam, there's a chiyuv to daven every day, because every day could be a tzara. There's always, we're in a perpetual eis tzara. On the other hand, the Ramban understood it in a more simple, more straightforward way. And here I'll read just the brief summary in the book. The Ramban maintains that not every person is able to come to this realization every day, especially at a time that he is not faced with adversity. Only when one finds himself in an actual eis tzara does an obligation of tefillah mid'oraisa exist. Okay, so this is, so to speak, section number two that is mentioned in the essay, and that is that even though there's a machlokas about daily tefillah, but there is an agreement about tefillah be'eis tzara, and then the question is, how do you define eis tzara? Is it tzara every day, or is tzara something that is in those unique existential crises that, you know, in life can creep up on people at various points? The next section, as you can see from the outline here, is the biggest section of the essay. And I have to say, personally, it probably included most of the chidushim, that, for me at least, in the piece. And it really was, I'd say, quite brilliant in characteristic of Rav Schechter's tremendous bekiyas. And that is the following. Once we've gotten to this point now, where we see that, according to the Rambam and the Ramban, eis tzara is a prominent feature, Rav Schechter then takes the conversation in the next direction. And he points out that on some level, we have to realize that the essence of all tefillos, not just the chiyuv now, but the actual experience of when we daven, is asking for things. Bakashas tzrachim. We shouldn't feel bad about asking God for things. On the contrary, that is the essence of davening. And he starts off by pointing out that there's a famous chassid shavort. He quotes it from somebody named Rav Yitzchak Vorker, who's one of the very early Hasidic masters. And I have heard this idea, Baal Peh, many times in the name of the more well-known Kotzker Rav, Kotzker Rebbe, Rav Menachem Mendel Kotzk. But it's a well-known Hasidic idea. And that is, maybe you've heard about this, the issue of the snake, the Nachash, right? Hashem punishes the Nachash in Gan Eden. that from now on, not only does he have to slither on his stomach, but he's always going to eat from the dust of the earth. So the Hasidim ask, how is that a punishment? How is that a curse? Every other creature, from human to animal, is always looking for food. Could be starving, God forbid. But the Nachash always has dirt. They have a ready-made meal plan. They'll never go hungry. What could be bad about that? How is that a curse? How is that a punishment? So the Hasidic masters answered, because one of the most important things in life is to be able to have a connection and a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem created the world in which it's necessary and built into the system that intermittently, no matter what, we have needs. There are things, whether it's food or other things, food being the most common, where we need Hashem. We're lacking in something. And therefore, we have to turn to Hashem, which continues and strengthens the ongoing relationship we have with Him. It's good that we lack for certain things, said Schechter, paraphrasing. That we have a right to daven. We yearn for the relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. If we're wanting, we turn to Hashem to satisfy whatever our needs are. Whereas the snake was told, here's everything you need, I don't have anything to do with you anymore. What could be a greater curse than that? Good, he has food to eat, but he has no relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Bakashas tzrachim are the essence of tefillah, the essence of every Shemon Esrei you ever say, because they are what creates the chibur, the connection that we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now he adds something very, very important here, which is that Rav Soloveitchik pointed out something which anyone, if you're thinking about it, would realize, but Rav Soloveitchik acknowledged this, and then he gave a great explanation, which is, okay, I get it. You know, bakasha tzrachim, asking Hashem for my needs, that's the essence of davening, I get that. But how do I know what I need? So he'll tell me, well, sometimes it's obvious. I have no money, it's obvious I need money. Okay, fair enough. I have no food, it's obvious. If I'm sick, God forbid, those are obvious. But there are a lot of other times where things might not be obvious at all. Moreover, let's say you're davening, and Rav Schechter gives this an example, even though I'll embellish it in my own way, but he says, let's say you apply for a job, and you're davening for it. But let's say, really, really, it wouldn't be good for you. You think it's going to be a great job for you, but Hashem knows the future, and Hashem knows it actually would be bad for you to have that job. You really hope that this girl wants to marry you. But what if somebody could tell you, looking into a crystal ball, that if you would marry that girl, it's going to be a disaster? Right? We don't always know what's good for us. We don't always know what we really need. So the way Rav Schechter here quotes from the Rav, this is an idea, the idea that he's about to say I've heard of, but that the Rav said it with the following raya or source, I have to say it was completely new to me. Soloveitchik suggested, en hachinami. That's one of the things we daven for. And he points out that at the end of that middle section of davening that we do every morning, right, the last of our bakashas tzrachim, our bakashot, is Shema Koleinu. And what do we say Shema Koleinu? We ask Hashem specifically, V'kabel berachamim uveratzon es tefilaseinu. So the way Rav Soloveitchik understood that, what does it mean to be mekabel? We ask Hashem with mercy and compassion and favor, accept our tefillah. So to read the words of the book, we ask that Hashem accept only those parts of our tefillah that He knows are for our benefit, and that He dismiss and ignore those requests that are to our detriment. Right? Sometimes you ask, you know, in life sometimes, right, you ask somebody for something, and then it blows up in your face, and you complain, and they say, listen, I gave you what you asked for. You know, there's an English expression, at least in American English, Gavriel, there's an English expression, right? Be careful what you ask for. You might just get it. Yes, Senator Soloveitchik, that's a real thing. And therefore, we include in our tefillah this request, Kabel Barachim Uvaratzon, as tefillah saying, please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, only give us the things that are actually good for us. And then, Rav Schechter goes on, based on the Rav, to do something which I think was really remarkable. Again, definitely was this part of it was new to me. And he, based on the Rav and some various Gemaras, he points out that this idea that the bakashot, our requests, are the essence of our davening, can be shown and should be understood in a number of contexts. It's true, he points out, that the Gemara tells us in Brachos Daf Lamed Beis Amar Aleph, and the Rambam quotes us in Hilchos Tefillah Perak Aleph, that we don't just start off Shemon Esrei, gimme, gimme, gimme. Rather, as the Gemara says, Yesader Adam Shivcho Shel Kadosh Baruch Hu V'Achachach Mispalol. First of all, we praise Hashem, right? The first part of our tefillah is praising Hashem, and then the last part of davening, as the Rambam tells us, is Hoda'ah, thanking Hashem, right? All of our daily Shemoneh Esreis are divided up into three sections. Shevach, Bakasha, and Tefillah. Fair enough, said the Rav. But nevertheless, despite that format, you should realize that we start off with the please, and we end with the thank you. But those are because it's Derech Eretz. It's Derech Eretz. You wouldn't go to a king, a human king. You wouldn't go to your parents, hopefully, if you're a mensch, if you have good Derech Eretz. Hopefully saying please, certainly saying thank you. Right? Anytime anyone gets invited to meet the prime minister, to the king, of course, you start off by telling them how great they are, and you thank them even for listening to you. It's Derech Eretz. So therefore, we include those other parts of our tefillah. But nevertheless, said the Rav, the essence of tefillah, the essence is not the first and the third. The essence is the middle, the bakashas. And I'm going to do it very, very quickly so we can get to the end of the essay. But he has a page or two here, which I think is really, to me, was eye-opening. And he points out that this phenomenon exists even on Shabbos and Yomim Tovim. Now, the reason this is a chiddush, it was a chiddush to me, it should be a chiddush to all of you, is because, as you probably know, there are no bakashos in our davening on Shabbos, right? At least so I thought. In fact, it's a halacha. The Gemara learns in Masechta Shabbos, based on the pasuk of Adabar Dover, that you're not supposed to have bakashos on Shabbos. We don't ask Hashem for personal things on Shabbos. We don't typically do that on Yom Tov either. That's why our Shemoneh Esrei looks completely different. And yet, Rav Soloveitchik points out that, in fact, we always have some element of bakasha, even on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And what is that bakasha? Remarkably, said Rav Soloveitchik, you know what the bakasha is? It's a spiritual bakasha. We ask Hashem not for the material things that we do on a daily Shemoneh Esrei, but for spiritual things. So just to give the example he gives on Shabbos and Yom Tov, right? On Shabbos and Yom Tov, in the middle of our tefillah, what do we say? The concluding paragraph of the middle part, before we get to Ritzei, the beginning, every on Shabbos, what's the concluding thing we say? Ritzei b'mnuchasenu, kadshenu b'mitzvosecha, v'sein chelkenu b'sorasecha. That's about kasha. We're not asking for a new car. We're not asking for good grades to get into a good school, for the pretty girl to like us. We're asking for spiritual things. Bakashas tzrachim on Shabbos are regarding our ruchnius needs, and they constitute the substance of tefillah. And for this, not only does he mention Rav Soloveitchik, but he mentions another tshuva that apparently Rav Moshe Feinstein, I didn't have a chance to look it up, apparently Rav Moshe Feinstein makes a similar point. I feel bad that we're going to run out of time in 2 minutes, so I'm not going to be able to go through everything he says from Rav Soloveitchik about Rosh Hashanah, but in a brilliant presentation, he shows how, from Rav Soloveitchik, how all three of the sections on the Rosh Hashanah davening, Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros, all three of those culminate, each of those three sections, with a request, which is of the theme of those three sections, and that request is a spiritual request. And it's not incidental, said Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Shechter brings over and over again that the reason that we fit in a bakasha, whether it's a physical one or a spiritual one, on all of these davenings, and all these Shemoneh Esreis, is because the essence of davening is the bakashos. That's also why the Mishnah and the Gemara and Brachos and Chavches and Chavtes and other places talk about the importance of personalizing tefillah. The idea that a person can add their own individual bakashot. Now is not the time, and Rav Shechter doesn't even get into it in this piece, when and how do you add bakashos during the individual brachos? Do you wait for Shema Koleinu? Do you do it after Elokai Netzor? That's an interesting halachic discussion, which we don't have time for right at the moment. But the Gemara is clear, if Shechter quotes this, that you're supposed to add personal bakashos. In fact, if all you do is say the same things all the time and you never personalize it, the Gemara looks askance about that. And the reason is because, broadly speaking, health, parnasa, the geula, v'chule, those are things that everyone, we assume, wants and needs. But of course, no two people are the same. No two people are the same. And therefore, if you don't personalize your tefillos, you're not being real with in your relationship with Hashem. The last section of the piece, and if you'll give me 2 more minutes, we'll finish up. The last section of the chapter is what he calls Tzorech Gavoa. And that is a remarkable idea that Rav Shechter calls our attention to, that there's an additional component. Yes, the essence of davening is our personal bakashot. That's what we just spent some time on. But there's an additional element, which is Tzorech Gavoa. That is to say, as much as we can understand it, God needs our tefillos. And this is evidenced in a number of Gemaras that Rav Shechter quotes, one of which is, we'll just quote one, is the Gemara in Yevamos, Taf Samach Beit, Dalet Amud Aleph, which the Gemara tells us something that's, I admit, on the face of it, very hard to understand, and certainly if we were going through it, it would be hard for us to accept. But the Gemara tells us how come it was that so many of our most famous matriarchs, the Imahos, and other tzidkaniot in our history? How come so often they are barren? They have trouble having children? And the Gemara tells us, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a great desire, he wants tefillah. Wow. And of course, if he gives us a crisis, like not being able to have a child, that will bring us to daven, which is really an remarkable thing. Moreover, Shachter quotes from the Gemara and Brachos on Daf Samach Amud Bet, which the Gemara tells us about davening, something that is painfully true and painfully obvious to all of us, which is that even though tefillah is dvarim she'omdim berumo shel olam, it's very important davening, nevertheless, b'nei odem mezalzlem behen. People don't always take davening seriously. We know people daven without kavana, they talk during davening. In our day and age, they're on their phone sometimes, right? It's a big problem. Yet, tefillah is omdim berumo shel olam. What about davening is omdim berumo shel olam? So here also, this was a new idea, a new insight to me, but the way Rav Schechter presents this, and I think this is his own idea, I'm not sure, I don't see him quoting any source for this, so I think this must be his own idea, says Rav Schechter, what about davening is berumo shel olam? Makes it so important that therefore it's such a terrible, disrespectful thing that other people are mezalzel in the tefillah. And says Rav Schechter, you know what makes davening so, so important? The fact that it is a tzorech gavoa, the very fact that Hashem wants tefillos, not just that it's so important for us, that we should realize that, I always thought the pshat in the Gemara is, that if we're honest, we realize how much rachamim we need, the points that we've been making earlier in this year, bakashas rachamim, and to be mezalzel on that, what a waste of an opportunity. But the way Rav Schechter, if I understood this correctly, Rav Schechter is presenting it slightly differently. That tefillah is very serious, he writes, as it addresses a tzorech gavoha, a need, as it were, for Hashem. And therefore the Gemara bemoans the fact that people are not sufficiently careful when they daven. Really incredible. Last but not least, the last main point that he mentions in the essay, which is very, very consequential, and he quotes it, this is classic Rav Schechter, in that his Bekiyas is just so amazing, especially in the world of Achronim. He quotes a very famous philosophical issue from the writings of the Nesivos HaMishpat. And it's actually the Nesivos' least known work, which is work on the Gemara, which is Nachlas Yaakov or Emes Yaakov on the Gemara there in Brachos. And the philosophical issue is not new, and it's not only in the Nesivos. It's a familiar idea that the Rishonim discuss. And perhaps if it would be a different Rosh Hashiva giving a shiur on tefillah, he would have quoted some other sources. But it's so kederach Rav Schechter, I'm sure he knows those other sources, but most people wouldn't know this Nesivos. I don't even know how many people would even know that he wrote on this. But Rav Schechter only knows it, but this is how he quotes it. He quotes from the Nesivos the very famous, unbelievable philosophical question, which is, how do we understand the whole concept of davening? How can we ask Hashem for anything? If we deserve it, then Hashem is going to give it to us. And if we don't deserve it, then Hashem's not going to change his mind because I butter him up. Please, please, pretty please. Hashem, you're amazing. Oh, please, please. How does it make any sense? Right? Very famous philosophical issue. And what he quotes, again, I've never seen this Nesivos inside. He quotes from the Nesivos HaMachlokes. The first idea, which apparently the Nesivos didn't like, he quotes from an obscure medieval Jewish philosopher, Rav Meir Ibn al-Dabi. Raise your hand if you ever heard of him. I'm not raising my hand either, don't worry. But I can tell you that there's more mainstream Rishonim, as far as I'm aware of, who make the same point. And that is, they say, how does tefillah work? Tefillah works not by changing Hashem, or Hashem's mind, but by changing us. The act of tefillah is really an act of tshuva. Davening humbles a person, reminds a person of what's important to make him a better person, v'chulei, he has Hashem on his mind more. Therefore, as he writes, Hashem isn't changed, but the person is changed. Tefillah brings a person closer to Hashem, and then memela, you become a different person, and that different person, you didn't change Hashem's mind. If Hashem made a gzeira, that God forbid, somebody would be sick. And then they do tshuva through their davening. It's not that Hashem's mind was changed. It's that the person that was nigzar to have, God forbid, that disease, doesn't exist anymore. Because I'm a new person. I did tshuva. Tshuva reinvents me. Gives me, right? That is, I would say, the rationalist approach. Those are my words, not Rav Schechter. Those are the rationalist approach to tefillah. Again, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that you can find that even in more mainstream sources than the more obscure source than the Nesivos quoted. However, the Nesivos doesn't like it. And the Nesivos himself accepts what I would say is the more mystical or Kabbalistic explanation. And he says, even though we cannot understand this on a rational level, we cannot understand this, nevertheless, he says, tefillah works to change Ratzon Hashem. We cannot understand how we're able to find favor with Hashem through tefillah, just like we don't know how tshuva. But just like we believe that tshuva can change things, again, he's not saying that we become different. That was the first approach. He's just saying, as an example, just like tshuva can change things, so too. How do we understand that? I don't know. And I'll leave you with reading just the last two sentences here from Rav Schechter. He's paraphrasing the Nesivis. He says, we cannot comprehend Hashem's essence or his ratzon. Nevertheless, it's one of the rules and regulations that Hashem established when he created the world that tefillah causes ritzui. Tefillah causes acceptance. We must daven, and only then can we receive Hashem's tremendous kindness. So this is really something that, you know, in a philosophy class should be discussed more, and he just mentions it briefly here at the end of the essay, which is, but the theme, the common thread that Rav Schechter is weaving, is because the idea of bakasha is the essence of davening, as we mentioned, and Eis Tzara, going back to the Ramban, and Rav Salvechik's explanation of how really the Ramban and the Rambam agree about Eis Tzara, but they're arguing about what counts as a Tzara, every day of life, the human condition is a Tzara, or only the more famous and obvious Tzaraot. Once he started with that, then he got to davening. The essence of davening is always bakasha, the chiddush that even on Shabbos, even on Yontif, we have spiritual bakashot. And then he ends with, well, if the essence of davening is bakasha, how does bakasha even work? How are you going to change God's mind by asking him? And the answer are the two approaches that he quoted in the name of the Nesivos. So I hope you've enjoyed. If you want to send me any comments or feedback, I'd be happy to hear it in preparation of next week and the next year. But at least to me, I loved and really enjoyed learning the chapter. I enjoyed sharing and give it over. And I think there is Kedarka B'Kodesh, just enormous, enormous amounts of breadth of knowledge. And Dr. Weissman did such a good job presenting and writing up the Shiurim that I hope that this is something that over the next few weeks and months of Kayetzman, on Wednesdays, we can continue learning together. And I think we'll all get better understanding of tefillah, and hopefully through that even improve all of our davening. Okay, have a great day, everybody. Enjoy, learn well.